Hey friend, welcome to Girls Night, where we work through life's biggest decisions and transitions together. I'm Stephanie Mae Wilson, and on this show, we talk about the everything era, that wildly confusing decade-ish, where we have to make some of the most significant decisions of our lives, typically all at the same time. If you're anything like me, this feels like a lot. How do you even know what you want in life? And even once you figured it out, how do you make it happen? Well, thankfully, we don't have to figure this out alone. I've invited some of the smartest women I know onto the show to walk us through the topics that keep us up at night. We're going to learn from both their experience and their expertise, and you'll walk away not only knowing what your next step is, but with the support you need to actually take it. No matter who you are, where you come from, or what decisions you end up making, you're welcome here. Get comfy and let's get started. So here's the thing, we've all been there. We've all had days where it feels like our emotions are getting the best of us or our minds can't stop racing. These moments are so frustrating because often we think, oh, I shouldn't be feeling this way, but still we do. And those feelings have a way of impacting every facet of our lives, our relationships, our career, our body image, and so much more. So the truth is, it's okay to feel our emotions. We need to feel our emotions. But what matters the most is how we respond to them. Our guest for today's episode is Dr. Allison Cook. Allison is a psychologist, a podcast host, and the author of three books, including her newest book called I Shouldn't Feel This Way, Name What's Hard, Tame Your Guilt, and Transform Self-Sabotage into Brave Action. For 20 years, Allison has helped women, ministry leaders, couples, and families learn how to heal painful emotions, develop confidence from the inside out, forge healthy relationships, and fully live out their God-given potential. One of my favorite parts of this episode was when Allison shared her strategy on how to name, tame, and transform our thoughts. I'm going to be using this one all the time. Friends, my hope is that you leave this episode feeling like you have a better grasp on how to navigate your tricky emotions, and also that you walk away having so much more compassion for yourself. Okay, this one is such a good one. You ready? Let's dive in. Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with samples. Friends, springtime is finally here, but that also means allergy season is in full swing. I have always struggled with allergies, and I don't know about you, but I am especially allergic to cats. More on that in a second. Well, luckily for those of us who live with the symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. Designed for serious allergy sufferers, Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill that relieve your allergy symptoms and decongest your nose so you can breathe better. This double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, a runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, an itchy nose and throat, and sinus congestion and pressure with ease. The time that I use Claritin the absolute most is when I'm at my parents' house, my childhood home. They have this absolutely beautiful cat that they love and I like, except for the fact that he sheds so much. So that means that I'm basically sneezing from the second I arrive home to the second I leave, unless I take Claritin. My dad has even started having it ready for me right when I walk in the door. Are you ready to live life as though you don't have allergies? It's time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed. Claritin, thank you so much for sponsoring our girls' night. We love having you. Friends, I am so excited about who you get to meet today. I'm sitting here with my new friend, Dr. Allison Cook. Allison, thank you so much for coming on the show.
I am so happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
We have something really fun in common, and that is we are on the same podcast network, That Sounds Fun Network, which I love.
It's I know. I was thinking about it when I saw you because we do some sort of cross-promotional items, and I learned a little bit about your podcast. So it's really fun to join you actually on it.
Yeah. You guys, if you haven't checked out like the whole collection of shows that are on the network, go check them out because they are all excellent. I was so honored and excited to get to join because I'm like, this is a truly like spectacular group of podcasters, and to get to be part of it, it's really cool.
Yeah, it's great.
Okay, so for women who haven't met you yet, can you tell us who you are, what you do, and a fun fact about yourself?
Yeah, I am a psychologist. I specialize in the integration of faith with psychology. I've been practicing for about 2 decades. I'm a podcast host, the Best of You podcast, as we talked about, and author. I just wrote my 3rd book, and I see clients. So I love bringing together all things psychology with faith. That's what I love the most. I guess the fun fact about me is I think it's not unusual to me, but I am born and raised in a very small town in Wyoming. And most people haven't met somebody from Wyoming is what I've discovered over time because we're the least populated state. There are not very many of us.
I guess that's, I feel like I've met some Wyomingers because I grew up, I'm born and raised in Colorado. So
no
I'm
way.
Like, yeah, oh. So we're like, neighbors. Well, I mean, now I live in Nashville, but
Colorado. Yeah, I lived in, and then I lived in New England. I lived in Boston. I'm in Boston. I lived in the West Coast, and that was always people are like, "Who is from Wyoming?" And I'm like, "Well, like, me."
That's amazing.
It gives you I tell people if you've ever seen the movie Footloose, either version of it, it's very much like that.
Okay,
so that was my experience. Yeah.
Yeah. I have like a whole bunch of follow-up questions, but I'm going to refrain. So do you live in Wyoming now? Where do you live now?
We split time. So my husband and I are empty nesters, primarily located in Boston, but since the pandemic, we are also both primarily remote. And so we spend a significant chunk of the year also in Wyoming. We love the mountains. We're big hikers and nature enthusiasts. So we kind of get the best of both worlds. We get a little bit of city fix and a little bit of the mountain fix.
That's so awesome. Yeah. I love that. Well, so you said you have 3 books out and your latest book is called I Shouldn't Feel This Way, Name What's Hard, Tame Your Guilt, and Transform Self-Sabotage into Brave Action, which I love. Can you tell us like what led you to writing this book and why is this topic so important for us right now?
Yeah, I have struggled with emotions all of my life. I am someone who kind of just thought emotions were inconvenient and just try to get them to go away. And I also often kind of used my faith as a way. I think that's common to many of us. We, in many ways, have been taught emotions are bad, just kind of faith over your emotions. And so I would do this thing I write about all the time called spiritually bypass my emotions, which essentially means instead of dealing with painful emotions or emotions I don't like, I would just kind of try to spiritualize them. And I see people do this a lot, just pray those feelings away or, you know, just have faith, you know, just choose joy. And those things aren't necessarily bad in and of themselves, but they actually bypass the God-given process that we all have to do. These emotions are there for a reason. Jesus had a full range of emotions. So I wrote this book a lot out of my own experience, both as a human and as a therapist, of realizing, oh my gosh, emotions are really valuable. They're important. We need to understand them. And often our first thing that we do when we feel an emotion, especially an uncomfortable one, is I shouldn't feel this way. I should just not. We guilt trip ourselves. We gaslight ourselves out of those emotions. And that kind of cuts us off from this huge, beautiful part of who we are. And so the book is sort of a map, a guide through especially those complicated emotions that we wish we wouldn't feel.
Oh gosh, I love that so much. I am a really, really deeply feeling person, but I also am totally inconvenienced by my emotions.
Yeah.
It's like, I feel like it's sort of both. At times I've been, you know, in seasons of my life, I've been really run by my emotions. And so learning that like your emotions, you may feel one way, but that doesn't mean that's actually what's happening. You know,
exactly.
You may feel rejected, but you actually weren't rejected. So that was like really revolutionary for me. I think these days more, I'm like, I just don't want to feel, I don't have time for that feeling. I don't like that feeling. Like I prefer happy emotions, positive emotions. I'm like famous for not wanting to watch sad things because I'm like, I don't like feeling that way. And so I don't want to artificially feel sad. And so I love this.
What's your Enneagram number, just out of curiosity?
I'm a 2-wing 3.
Okay. Yeah, we're very similar. I was thinking either 7, 3, or 2. So yeah, there's some of us who it's a little bit harder for, but even the folks for whom emotions come more naturally and feel more readily, I love what you're saying, because we don't do ourselves any favor when we bypass, you know, those emotions. They are there to give us cues about safety, about who to trust, who not to trust. If we're feeling uncomfortable or complicated about someone, that's usually a cue that maybe there needs to be something addressed in a relationship. But I love also what you said, that sometimes, like, anger is a great example. You know, I feel really angry at someone, and sometimes they've done something to hurt me that I need to address. And sometimes I feel angry because maybe there's something inside of me that I don't want to face, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's really important that we're discerning about those emotions so that we don't react or do things that harm a relationship. We first have to understand what that emotion is cueing us to, either about ourselves or about the relationship.
This is so good. You guys, I'm really sorry about this, but I put a cough drop in, and I'm like, this is podcasting 101, don't do this. But yesterday, I have toddlers, they pick up gross germs at preschool. I then get the gross germs. And so therefore, yesterday during a podcast interview, I had like a coughing fit I could not recover from. So I'm sorry if you can mouth people. I'm really sorry if you can hear my cough drop. You talk a lot about being tangled in our mixed emotions. Where do these feelings originate from? And why do we often have so many conflicting feelings and emotions?
Yeah, we have emotions throughout, I think something like 90% of our day, often more than one emotion simultaneously. And that is just the reality. We are surfing emotions all the time, and we get cues about our emotions. We're often interpreting, right, these feelings from our nervous system, right? When our nervous system senses danger, we feel an uncomfortable emotion. That emotion might be anxiety. That emotion might be anger. We might feel the emotion of sadness when we kind of pivot into that depressed, not literally depressed, but that lowered nervous system state. And so we're kind of getting fired at all the time, right? There's just these firings happening through our nervous system. We're interpreting them from our brain. And so these emotions originate in response to something in our environment. Something happens that's hard, and we have a response to it. And so I say in the book, kind of the first place to start is name what's hard, start with yourself. Because our temptation when we have an emotion is to look outside of us. What happened? What did that person do that made me feel this way? That's just natural. You know, and maybe they did do something, but name what's hard, start with yourself. Your body sent you that cue. And our bodies need us to bring all of the brain God has given us online, the thinking brain, not just the feeling brain, right? We have to bring that thinking brain online to go, oh, I'm noticing this uncomfortable feeling, whatever it is. And Dr. Dan Siegel coined this term, name it to tame it. As you begin to name that feeling, you bring your thinking brain online, which calms your reactivity. It calms the emotion. It's still there, but it brings it into your conscious awareness where you can then actually do something with it. All that happens inside of you. Whether you're aware of it or not, you are having that emotional response and interpreting it almost simultaneously. The problem is most people are doing that outside of your conscious awareness, right? Mm-hmm. And that's when we get in trouble, right? That's when we get in trouble because we misinterpret a cue that our body is sending us. And so name what's hard, start with yourself. I'm feeling something I don't like here. I feel nervous. You know, and then the minute we've named that, we bring our thinking brain online. Is there something that's happening where I should feel nervous, right? And we can start to reflect on that and engage whatever's happening outside of us from a healthier, less reactive place.
That's so good. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. As many of you know, I recently wrote a book, and while it was the most rewarding project of my career so far, it also came with a lot of hard work and long nights. And sometimes when things started to feel a little bit overwhelming, I needed to get a few things off my chest so I could clear my mind and keep the writing process flowing. And the thing that helped me so much to sort through those feelings was therapy. Now tell me if any of this sounds familiar. Maybe you're going through something really hard right now, a big loss or a gigantic life transition. Maybe you frequently feel anxious, depressed, overwhelmed, or just generally discouraged. Maybe you really, really, really want your life circumstances to change, but you don't know how to actually change them. Or maybe you're feeling stuck as you try to work through your past, navigate your present, or figure out your future. Friend, if you can relate to any of this, you're not alone. I've been there, and therapy has been the thing that has helped me more than anything else with all of this. In the last 10 years or so, I've learned that strength isn't proving I can do it on my own. It's knowing that I don't have to. I'm at my strongest when I have a full support system around me, and an essential part of my support system is therapy. Therapy can be absolutely life-changing. That is, if you can afford it and find a therapist you like and trust. But of course, this is easier said than done, and that's why I'm so excited to be partnering with this week's podcast sponsor. Our sponsor for today's episode is BetterHelp. BetterHelp is the easiest and most affordable way I've ever found to find a great therapist. It's entirely online and super easy to sign up. You can get started right away, and if you don't love the counselor you're paired with, switching is easy and it's free. If you're going through something hard in your relationships, or if you're in a funk you just can't shake, if you've been feeling anxious or depressed lately, or if you're feeling stressed and you need help balancing your everyday life and schedule, BetterHelp is an incredible resource for you. And I'm so thankful that they've given me a promo code that I can share with you to make it even easier to get started. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/friendship today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/friendship.
Well, good day to you. It's Joel with The King Country dropping in to let you know that our brand new film, Unsung Hero, is in theaters now.
It's Luke here. We've teamed up with the creators of Jesus Revolution to bring you this adventure of a lifetime. It's a powerful, true story about a family uniting, growing in their faith, and facing the impossible together.
In theaters now, unsunghero.movie for more information.
Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
That's so good. So you're not naming necessarily like what the thing was that kind of triggered the emotion. You're naming the emotion that you're feeling.
Yes. And it's the hardest. I think it's a spiritual practice. I really do. I think it's something we should all be learning. And it's not just in the therapy office, although if you have big emotional reactions, a lot of times that can be a sign of past pain, past wounds. You want to unpack that with a therapist. You don't want to do that work alone because we store those emotional responses in our bodies, especially when there's been trauma, right? There's like that backlog. It doesn't go away. And that's where we really need to do that work. But even if you don't have that, it is part of our job as followers of Jesus, right? As spiritual beings, part of our spiritual formation is to learn to do this process of naming what's hard, starting with ourselves. It's a self-awareness. It's this emotional intelligence. What am I feeling in this moment? You know, I'm frustrated. I'm jealous. I'm mad. I'm sad. And that's why I called the book, I Shouldn't Feel This Way. We feel like we shouldn't feel those feelings. It doesn't help us. That process is a part of, I always say, adding a comma, God. I'm sad, God. I'm jealous, God, no shame. This is just what I'm feeling. When I start there, I name it. There's truth. The truth sets us free. It's true. It's what I'm feeling, whether I should be or not. God knows it. I know it now. It's in my conscious awareness. Then you've set yourself up to respond in a healthier way to that feeling. It starts inside of you.
I love that. I love that because really, you know, saying I shouldn't feel this way doesn't change the feeling. Like it just adds a whole other layer of shame and guilt on top of whatever you're feeling. So now you're sad and full of shame. Like,
exactly.
Well, we've made this worse.
Exactly. That's why I've noticed in my own life where that title came from is that is so often the very first feeling I have to name. Uh-huh. I start to notice myself beating myself up. I shouldn't feel this way. oh, that's my cue, that my inner guilt tripper. And uh-huh. I always tell people guilt is an emotion. It does not always mean we've done something wrong. We often feel guilt when we have not done something wrong. It's an emotion. It's not a direct line from God. And so that first feeling of guilt or beating myself up or self-criticism, I have to go, oh, I'm feeling really hard on myself right now. Okay, what's going on, right? That's our cue to stop and notice what we're telling ourselves.
That is, okay, I don't really know how to even ask this question because I feel like you like poked something and I'm like, more of that.
Yeah.
You said that's not a direct line from God. I think a lot of times we feel like, especially if you're like, I'm a total feeler. I think a lot of us interpret our feelings as messages from God.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to me about that. Like, is that...
Emotions are...
Tell me anything.
Yeah, emotions are not bad or good. They're not directly from God. They are from our bodies. They originate in our bodies and our nervous system through our brain. It's our job to discern and interpret and lead our emotions in partnership with God. But we have a lot of emotions that don't match the situation in front of us. That's why I call this a spiritual formation process. Part of becoming more Christ-like is I look at Jesus. Jesus was the most emotionally intelligent person who ever lived. He knew how to honor the emotion that he had in the correct proportion to what was happening outside of him. So when Jesus felt angry, there was a reason for him to feel angry, and he behaved appropriately in response to that anger. We see several instances of that. When Jesus felt anguish or sad, there was a reason. His emotion perfectly matched the instigating event. Now, as humans, we're complicated. And so we feel angry, you know, we feel big angry when something minor happened. Right? All of that is related to our past wounds, our childhoods, all the messaging. You know, there's a million things that go into that. And so our process as adults is to learn. It's kind of like going back to what we teach our kids. What's the emotion that I feel? Let's name it. Give it a name. Use your words. I'm angry. Then we get to go to the thing that happened. What actually happened? We have to become detectives. Put a little box around my emotion. I'm not going to make it go away. It's here. I'm angry. I'm big angry. What is the thing? What are the facts? What actually happened? We do this with our kids all the time. What actually happened? What actually happened, right? And, you know, try to match the emotional response to the actual thing that happened so that we're behaving, our behavior happens accordingly. And so we do that through the power of the Holy Spirit. We discern our emotions. We talked about guilt. That was a huge one for me, Stephanie, is to realize guilt is I have a really overactive guilt meter. I feel guilty for everything all the time. And it's just like, oh my gosh, just because I feel guilt does not mean I did something in reality that was wrong. And so I've learned to ask myself when I feel guilty, did I do something wrong? And I investigate it. And I look at it. And so often, here's the thing about naming emotions. Guilt isn't the right word for the emotion I'm feeling. So often, the emotion I'm feeling is sad. I disappointed someone. I don't want to disappoint someone. That makes me feel sad. But I didn't actually do anything wrong. It's not guilt. Guilt is sort of a mask for a deeper emotion that's harder to feel. And so this work really reveals, we get to the truth. We get to the truth, but we have to look at the emotions in partnership with God's Spirit and be very discerning about them. It takes some work.
So there's like, you know, I think I'm glad that you said the Holy Spirit, because I think that that's what a lot of us interpret. We're like, okay, this is, if I feel scared, like this is an example that I think a lot of us struggle with. Like, if I feel scared, is that me being a scaredy cat, or is that my, you know, clinically diagnosed anxiety cropping up, or is that the Holy Spirit being like, run, kid?
That's a great question. And so I say to people about, I shouldn't feel this way. It's three practices to do this work of untangling our emotions. And I say it's simple, but it's not easy. It's emotional maturity takes work and discernment, because it could be any one of those things. I feel scared in this moment could be my nervous system accurately telling me there's danger here, and the Holy Spirit is going, get out. That could be what's true. I feel scared in this room could be I lack confidence. I have been rejected in the past and I'm terrified I'm going to be rejected. And actually what I need to do is be brave and step into this room. And the emotion is the same. The emotion is the same. And so we have to learn how to discern these emotions. We have to learn. And so the practice in the book that I think is the most unusual, we have to name them, and then we have to figure out the action we're going to take. But this middle step I call frame, name, frame, brave, framing. We have to learn to pause, slow ourselves down, be our own best friend, right? I'm walking into this room. I feel scared. No shame, right? That's the first step. I name it without shame. I'm scared. God, what's going on here? Help me discern what this is about. Is it unsafe for me to be here? Am I putting myself in danger? Or, you know, and that take that framing, that middle step takes some practice and some work. And we have to get to the roots of our fear. And we have to understand ourselves, and we have to grow in this self-awareness. So it's a practice that we have to learn in partnership with God's Spirit.
Is this something, I'm guessing that this is something that gets faster with time.
100%.
Okay. Okay. Because I'm picturing like standing outside of a networking event and being like, I'm scared. Uh-oh. Okay. Like, I mean, like that may take a trip to the bathroom. You're sitting there and going, okay, like, why am I scared? And you know, what's happening? Is this actually a, you know, unsafe situation or whatever? But I'm guessing that would get faster.
Yes, absolutely. You learn. And just like so many of us, we're good in the moment. There's nothing wrong with it of just being like, God be with me, right? There's that it's a way in which you learn to trust yourself in partnership with God's Spirit. So you more quickly kind of discern the nuances of that emotion. But for folks who have never done the work, that's why I'm really just trying to break it down, even to just sort of give you a WebMD of some of these different options, right? So you realize, oh, because sometimes we can sabotage ourselves in the name of our faith. You know, well, the Holy Spirit told me, and it's like, did the Holy Spirit tell you, right? I mean, sometimes yes, but what if I've recently had a couple of people say to me, I think this is God talking to me. And I'm like, I think God is talking to you. Yes. And I think I'm not sure the way you're interpreting how God is talking to you is exactly the right way. You know, who am I to say that except for I know you really, really well, you know? Yeah. And so we do that all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. What is, you know, you said people who haven't done this work, can you kind of paint a picture for us of what this looks like if we don't do this?
Yeah, that was my story. So 20 years ago, 15 years ago, I guess it was 20 years ago now, I was studying to be a therapist. I was a Christian. I was, you know, in my doctoral work, and I was just an expert at sidelining emotions. Just don't feel them. Don't look at them. And I remember I was never more productive. I was never helping more people. I'm that 3-2 combo, you know, and I was mounting. In hindsight, I see that for a year, intense loneliness, intense anxiety, overwhelm was just mounting like a geyser inside of me. And I was just working harder. And I started, it came out. Those emotions will come out. And in my case, they came out in a series of panic attacks. Now, I've never had panic attacks since, and that's not always the way it happens. Sometimes it comes out in your relationships. You blow up on someone you love, right? These emotions hijack us. And someone who's actually safe comes along, and that backlog of emotions is like, I can finally release. And that geyser comes out in a way that you wish you didn't. So sometimes it comes out that way with the people we love. If you're someone who, you know, you're like, I don't know what's wrong with me, and I just melt down. And usually it's a little thing, and I have this big reaction. That's usually because there's that backlog in there. And so what I had to learn through that experience was I was like, oh, this is unsustainable. And so when I tend my emotions, if I tend the fact that I was lonely during that season, right? I was left. A lot of my girlfriends had married and moved away. I was increasingly by myself, but I didn't want to name that. I didn't want to admit that because I didn't know what to do about it. But when you name it and go, oh, this is kind of a lonely season. I don't love that. It's hard to name that. You can tend to yourself through that. When we tend a little bit of pain, we can actually enjoy more and we can actually keep that pain more manageable. So we actually have to learn how to tolerate a little bit of pain. We might go through a season of feeling kind of jealous because our friends are getting the things that we really long for and we're not, right? I shouldn't feel that way. We try to stuff it down. Well, I've seen this numerous times. That can come out sideways where you actually start subtly trying to sabotage someone. You start gossiping behind someone's back, instead of owning, I'm kind of jealous. This is hard for me. You know, no shame in that. We tend to that a little bit. We might put a few boundaries in place, really care for ourselves. Suddenly we're able to move forward. It's learning how to move forward with those emotions. So we're trying to avoid those big, those big mistakes or those big disappointments and keep them manageable.
Yeah. Opening a vent a little bit instead of keeping it so locked that it's like, this is going to explode at some point.
Because it will. Letting a little bit out, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In your book, you talk about distinguishing fact from fiction in relationships. And like, relationships are the hardest part of this for me. Like, I'm so glad that you said, that you have like an overactive guilt meter.
Yeah.
Because I think being able to recognize that, like, man, I feel guilty about everything. So like, let's maybe not give as much, like put as much trust into our guilt meter. Like it's, that thing's pretty sensitive. For me, it's people being mad at me. That is my thing. And so it was funny. A couple of days ago, I felt like my husband was mad at me. This friend I was texting was mad at me. Probably someone I didn't know was mad at me. Kind of this collection. And I was like, how likely is it that all of these people are mad at me for some reason? Like, did I do something wrong to every single one of them? No, I didn't. And like that path between believing that and trying to fix or overcome or compensate for that feeling like has gotten so much shorter. And I was able to be like, common denominator here is me. Well, hey, what's happening in here that's making you feel so like, I don't know what the word is. Like you've, you know, done all these things wrong or like your relationships are all kind of on the fritz. So I really like the idea that the more we do this, the more we can recognize our patterns and like the quicker we can get through them. But I love this question so much because fact from fiction in relationships is like totally my kryptonite and has been my whole life. It's gotten better. Therapy has made it a lot better. Can you talk to us about this? Like, what does that mean and how can we do that?
When you say that, what do you mean? You mean it's hard for you to discern what's actually going on?
Yeah, I think so. Like it's oversensitive. It's like, you know, that person like looked away or something. I'm like, oh man, I must've done something. Like I always feel like it's my fault.
Yep.
It always has to do with me. I always did something wrong. Yep. And I mean, this is like one of the most consistent conversations that my husband and I have had over the last 10 years. It's like, Steph, I'm in a bad mood about something totally separate. It has nothing to do with you.
Yep.
And like you didn't cause this, you don't need to fix it. It's like it's not about you. That's just my immediate go-to, and it has been, you know, forever.
Are you high in empathy?
Yes.
So I talk about what I call the empathy trap. I think it goes right hand in hand with the guilt meter. Mm-hmm. So my book, The Best of You, is really about that empathy trap, and then this one's more about the guilt meter. But they're very similar in the sense that we almost subtly can, like almost train people to need us to be that present figure for them. And when we start to find our own boundaries and when we start to recognize what's mine to own, what's mine to control, what's not mine to control, sometimes people don't like it and we haven't done anything wrong. So that's the first thing I want to say. Sometimes when we change and we just start to be a little bit less focused on reading the cues of everybody around us and more attuned to the cues inside of us, I'm tired. I can't respond to those 6 texts today because I've got some stuff on my plate. Those people might be mad. And also, I didn't do anything wrong because I'm honoring my own inner cues, which is hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about, I feel like most of the time, like there's that, and that's, I mean, boundaries, the women who have listened to Girls Night Forever have, we've talked about boundaries so much because that's been the bulk of my work over the last, you know, 6 years or so. Mm-hmm. And exactly what you said of figuring out like what's mine to own, what's not. But I think that the place where like, I've tended to get tripped up even more is like, no one's actually mad.
Yeah. I get what
you're
saying.
So that's why I'm wondering, like, fact from fiction in relationships, how do we figure out?
Yeah.
How do we discern the difference?
Yeah. So I would call these thinking traps. And this is part of the WebMD that I go through in the book of all these different thinking traps. And what I'm hearing is making assumptions, mind reading, mental filters, where we have to really, again, name what's hard, start with yourself. I feel like they're mad at me. So you asked, how do I discern fact from fiction? I feel like they're mad at me. What's the message I'm telling myself? Well, I saw them look away when I walked in the room. They didn't come right over to me. And you have to sort of become your own sort of detective. Okay, so they looked away when I walked in the room. Okay. They could be mad. What are some other possibilities? And you have to capture that thought. Again, it starts inside of you. And I encourage people, don't immediately go to the other person and ask them, are you mad at me? Because that can encourage it. There is a time and a place for that. But first, you're trying to recognize the thinking trap. This is, I'm mind reading. I'm making an assumption. I think I know what's going on with that person when I actually do not know. I do not know. So the first step to discerning fact from fiction is to be really honest with yourself. I don't know. I do not know what is at the root of their behavior. They haven't texted me back in 3 days. I do not know why. I don't know. Unless they've told me, I don't know. I don't know why they didn't come over to me at the party, right? That's the first step, is really to hold yourself accountable, to name it. This is what I tend to do. I tend to always have a negative filter. I tend to think it's always my fault. Okay, now that I named that without shame, I notice that they're undoing that, right? She hasn't texted me. And we're building this tolerance inside of us for uncertainty. Okay, this is hard. Self-compassion. This is hard. I'm building a new muscle. I think about it like being at the gym. I'm building some core strength. I want to think that they're mad at me, but I don't know that. And then you can kind of get to, I use this acronym FRAME. What are the facts? Roots. Why do I think? Where did that come from? Why do I always think that people are mad at me? You know, there's something that's about that. And you're just gently giving yourself a little window to notice the messages in your own mind. And so now, I will say, if you're someone especially with those negative filters or the mind reading, sometimes, especially based on the relationship, you can say to a loved one, especially if it's a spouse, this is something I'm working on, but I would name it. Because otherwise, they can go crazy, you know, because we're always checking in. Are you mad at me? Are you mad at me? It's not that. It's saying, I'm working on this. Would it be okay from time to time if I ran it past you? Because I'm trying to kind of correct the radar inside of me, the GPS inside of me. Because then you get data. There's this word called, you start to get new data that says, you know, your friend says, oh man, you know, my mom was in the hospital. I wasn't texting anybody for 3 days. Oh, and you consciously pair the new data with C. And it's all about kind of bringing it up from out from underneath the iceberg into your conscious awareness. See? And you're reparenting yourself. We do this with our kids. You're reparenting yourself. See? It wasn't about you. Look at that. No shame, but look at that. Isn't that amazing? Right? You kind of walk yourself through that process and you grow that core strength inside.
This is so beautiful and so good. And like, I know, I'm like, picture, I know that there are women who are sitting here going, oh man, that's me. Like, this is so good, because this is, I wish I could have heard this as a fifth grader and yes. as a seventh grader and in high school and in college. Like, this, I've been doing this work for the last handful of years, and it's been so healing and helpful, but I still, it's like, this is a weak muscle for me. And so it's something that like I've had to really overwork to try to like get better at. But it's been so helpful to be better at it and to be able to have that thought, man, I feel like everyone's mad at me, and go, wait a minute, like that's really pretty rarely true. What's happening here?
I love it that you're able to know that about yourself with compassion, right? And I think about, you know, your parenting, and if you're parenting, you think about with a young child, we start this, we see it with our own kids. You know, a kid comes up, they were mean to me, right? Our first instinct is to be like, what, you know, but that's what we want to teach our kids. What happened? Tell me what happened. With compassion, we believe them. Tell me what happened, right? We want to help them discern truth, right? And it's kind of what we're trying to do with ourselves. What really happened? You're connecting. You cannot shame yourself with it. You know, we have to be really gentle with ourselves. I get it. You're scared. This is scary. I get it, right? So you're first showing compassion. That's the first step. But then there's that gentle inquiry. What really happened? Let's look at the facts. Let's look at the facts. And you're bringing that thinking brain online with the emotional brain again.
Rewiring our brains, like digging grooves in our brains of like familiar paths and needing
neuroplasticity.
Neuroplasticity. Yeah. Can you like show us what that looks like? Because that would be part of this getting easier, is like the more we walk this new road, the more automatic it becomes, right?
Exactly. And to use the metaphor of building the muscle, that's literally what's happening. So what happens is you sort of get this conditioning all the way through childhood. Our brains are being formed and we get messages. And again, even in the best of families, so there's families where you're just learning through the way that you're parented, it's my job to always make sure everybody around me is okay. Because mom and dad are angry or sad or depressed. They're not dealing with their own stuff. And if I can just be perfect and if I can do everything right, they're going to feel better. And so our brains get trained. Those neural pathways in our brain just blaze, right? So here I am as an adult, right? And my husband is like, I kind of had a bad day. Very normal thing. But that pathway in the brain goes, what do I need to do? What can I do? How can I help? How can I make it better? And your husband's like, I don't need you.
I'm fine. Yeah.
To fix me. I just said I had a bad day. It's not your fault. And this is why there can be no shame. That pathway in your brain has gone to, here's a data point. Here's a stimulus of somebody being upset. My brain goes right to, I have to fix it. Mm. Because that is what, that pathway has been blazed since you were one, hypothetically, right? Hypothetical person. This happens in the best of families. It happens in really dysfunctional families. We get these pathways blazed. So we find ourselves in adulthood. And I always think of marriage and family life really is helping us retrain and heal. There could be another pathway. Suddenly it's like there could be a fork in the road where, okay, my husband's grouchy. He's having a bad day. There's two pathways here. One is I need to fix it. One is maybe he needs space and I'll go take care of myself right now. Holy moly, that's a new pathway.
New world.
And it's in there, but you can, through conscious effort, begin to create that pathway so that it's a real choice that you can make in that moment.
I love that. I love that. Do you, I want to go back to some of the background behind the feeling I shouldn't feel this way. Are there like some societal pressures or cultural expectations that you've identified that contribute to us feeling like we shouldn't feel certain emotions?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of layers to it. I think as women, many times we feel like we should just, you know, check our emotions at the door. We don't want to be perceived as emotional. I think in faith communities, emotions have gotten a bad rap. In some faith communities, not all, that there's been some misunderstanding, understandably, about emotions and the role of emotions. We haven't been taught well about emotions in our faith communities. And so we are kind of taught to sometimes we're taught to bypass them. Sometimes since we don't talk about them at all, we just don't know what to do with them. So I think that's a big part of it. I think generationally, you know, when I was parented, you know, growing up in the 80s, we didn't talk about emotions. You know, we didn't name emotions. Now there's almost an overcorrection. And I see that culturally where it's like every emotion that you feel is just 100% valid. And yes, the feeling of the emotion is valid, but that doesn't always mean, as you and I've discussed, that that doesn't necessarily tell us how we should act based on the emotion. So we sort of overcorrected. But I think a lot of us generationally grew up, a lot of us who have been parenting in the last 10 to 20 years grew up in an era where we didn't talk about emotions, right? So that's a big cultural shift. We just understand so much more about the brain scientifically. Yeah. So I think it's sort of like the era, especially I think in faith communities, of, oh my gosh, these emotions, they're not the enemies. Yeah. They're cues. They're part of our God-given design. And we can learn how to, it's actually part, just as we need to be good stewards of our bodies, our physical bodies, as best we can. We need to capture our thoughts, notice what we're thinking about. We also need to become really aware and mindful of our emotions.
Yeah.
Why is it that with sparkling water, I'm always playing guessing games with what flavor I'm drinking? Is it citrus? Is it aluminum can flavored? Not sure. Sparkling ice, though, they really mean flavor. Like in-your-face flavor. Orange mango, black raspberry. Don't even get me started on the strawberry lemonade. Kiwi strawberry slid right into my taste buds' DMs last night and let them know who's boss. No subtleties there, and no sugar either. But it does have vitamins and antioxidants. Find sparkling ice at a major grocery store or club retailer near you. Sparkling ice. Anything but subtle.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
I love this. I'm excited to ask you about this. One of the things that you talk a lot about is gaslighting yourself. And I would love to hear more about this, like what this looks like, how to recognize when you're doing it, how to kind of get out of it. What does it look like to gaslight yourself?
Yeah. So let's start with what gaslighting is. It's such a buzzy, trendy word. And it is a really terrible thing. But gaslighting in and of itself, it's a form of deception. So, you know, for example, your friend borrows your phone and loses it, or borrows your phone without asking and cracks it. And, you know, you go to your friend and say, hey, you know, my phone is cracked. What's the deal? And they say, I didn't do that. You're paranoid. And so there's two parts to gaslighting. There's a lie, right? There's a lie. And then there's an attempt to make you feel crazy, right? And so gaslighting, it's really a kind of deceptive manipulation where I'm trying to get you off of my tail by invalidating your experience and making you feel crazy so that you stay off of me because I am doing something, right? And so when we gaslight ourselves, essentially what we're doing, a part of us is doing, we pick this up from other, you know, from other messages, but, you know, it's like I feel really angry. That's how I really feel. And then this part of us, some part of us is like, no, you don't. You don't feel angry. You know, you don't feel angry. That's crazy. You shouldn't feel angry, right? It comes in. It's not just guilt tripping. It's a really invalidating. That is not actually your experience. You're not angry. And we sort of twist ourselves into pretzels to not feel the thing that we really feel. So there's guilt tripping, which is, oh, you're a bad person that you feel that way. You've got to hide it. Gaslighting is a little bit more, you don't really feel that way. You can't trust the way you feel. There's other feelings. That's not how you really feel. You know, and if you imagine, think about that voice, we pick it up, usually from parents, from somebody in our life, from authority figures. That's not, because you can imagine in a toxic parenting situation, you know, you don't really feel angry. You're fine. You know, and the kid's like, well, I do feel angry or I do feel sad.
I thought I did. Now I don't know what I think.
I don't know, right? Yeah. And so we pick that up internally and do it to ourselves. Oh, I can't trust the way I feel. I don't really feel this way. When you do. And so that's just, it's just another way that we try to deal with these emotions that we don't want to have. That's really doesn't work.
It's so interesting that we make it so much more complicated.
Yeah.
Like if you feel jealous about something, the fastest way to get through it, the fastest and healthiest way is to name it, is to say,
exactly,
I feel jealous. Like you got right through it. You know, now you can deal with it. Now you can react appropriately. You're not going to, you know, mess up the relationship as a result. Like all these things, but we go, I don't feel jealous. No, I don't. And like, oh, okay, well, maybe I do feel jealous, but like you're a terrible person for feeling jealous. And it's like, man, this one emotion has taken over a month instead of 10 minutes. Well, really, it could have been so much faster.
And that's the tangled up knot. You're exactly right. We create a tangled up knot that's actually, it's so freeing, man. When you just start to have the freedom, go, this is how I feel. I don't like this person. I wish I didn't feel that way, but I do. I'm not going to act on it, right? I want to be a good, you know what I mean? Like, it's not that we're going to act on all those emotions, but we feel them. We all do. Yeah. We're human.
So the goal here is to pause, is to feel the feeling, to vent it a little bit, to like open it up and take a look at it so it doesn't get pressurized and explode at some point.
Exactly.
But once we identify it, we can ask some questions about it because we're trying to figure out an appropriate way to respond.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah. Okay. That's exactly right. We want to name it, then we want to take a look at it. That's the thing that's hardest for people, that place in between, that framing where it's like, and it can take, you know, I tell people, I do it and I do it on my walks. I encourage people, carve out some time in your day. We know we try to carve out time for God. I think this is all stuff we do in partnership with God, but it could be your commute home from work. It could be a walk that you take every afternoon. It could be that you turn the radio off or the podcast off when you're cooking or gardening and you are present, you are mindful of what you're thinking about and what you're feeling. It's called mindfulness, and that sounds really, you know, complicated. All that means is that I set aside time during my day to just notice, what am I thinking about? I'm in the carpool lane, picking up my, turn off the radio. What am I thinking about? Wow, that's what I'm thinking about. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm feeling. Just notice whatever's there. As you do that, that's that reflection. Isn't that interesting? And then you start to, don't rush, you know, as you realize that that process works, as you notice things, you start to every day kind of go, oh, that's so interesting. I was so mad yesterday. I'm not actually mad anymore. I think I overreacted. I don't think I actually need to say anything. I think I'm okay. Right? Because you trust yourself. You're going to keep coming back to it. Or the next day you're like, I'm still really mad. I don't think this one's going to go away. I think I'm going to have a conversation with that person, right? Yeah. You start to kind of, because our emotions, once we honor them, this is how God designed us. Once we honor them, once we take them out and put look at them, we'll bring them into the light of truth.
I love this so much. It is funny. I have twin 3-year-olds and they are currently in, at this moment, they have big emotions. And like every few minutes, I think they're kind of practicing being mad and sad. And like, just for no reason, out of the blue, all of a sudden, I'm very sad. Like, okay, buddy. Or like, I'm really mad. Or I'm gonna go hide in a closet. Don't come find me. Like we have massive emotions right now. And it really is so funny to like, I find that the voice that I use when I talk to them, where I'm like, hey, buddy, okay, what are we feeling? What's happening? Like, okay, what did she say? And I mean, they're totally learning this with each other. They're bouncing off of each other. And so it's like, well, we got to figure this out because you cannot pull each other's hair. Like that is not, that's not allowed. That's
right.
The place where we draw the line. But it is so cool. I, you know, feel like I get on their level and I say, hey, buddy, like, what are we feeling? And I talk to myself that way too, which is
yes,
a way nicer way to live.
And- And it really works. And I think of the verse, you know, God's kindness leads to repentance, right? It's not shame. Shame doesn't do it. And we see it with our kids. It's like, hey, you can't pull your sister's hair. I get that you were upset. Tell me about being upset. I'll help you find a better way, right? We're with them. And it's exactly, okay, you can't go, you know, you can't, you know, let's say you're feeling envy, you know, I'm not going to go do something stupid, you know, about that friend. But man, that's hard. I get it. That's hard. It's okay. And it's fascinating. Those emotions just de-escalate.
Yeah. Yeah. My girls were really into Daniel Tiger for a little while. And he says, like, when you get so mad and you need to roar, you take a deep breath and count to four. Like a one, two, three, four. And they do it so much. And it's so funny because my girls kind of forget to do that themselves. But if I'm mad, Annie never misses a time to tell me, Mama, don't forget, count to four. Mama, you're mad. I'm like, yeah, I'm mad. You just threw 1,000 goldfish all over the floor. You know, it's just so funny. Take a deep breath and count to four.
That's great. I love it.
For women who are not in therapy right now, what are some kind of filters they can use to decide if this might be a good time to like start up with a therapist or start back up in therapy?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of thoughts I have about therapy. If you have trauma that you are aware of, where you know there's abuse or really some hard dynamics, there's just no reason not to work that through with a therapist because it's just going to help you live a better life. And I think that that's important to work through with a therapist because of everything we know about trauma and the way that it works. You want to be with someone who is a trained professional. If you're dealing with anxiety, sometimes we don't know the cause, but let's say if you're dealing with anxiety or depression and it's keeping you from doing things that you want to do, it's keeping you from relationships you want to have, it's keeping you from going, living a life that you want, a therapist is there to help you. There's just no reason, in my mind, not to do it. So I just think, I honestly think most people ought to see a therapist at some point in their life. They're also just really helpful to work through skills, basic skills, how to communicate better, how to communicate more effectively. When I talk about this place in between naming and braving, right, where I'm trying to understand the roots of something, a weekly therapy appointment can be your place to do that just as self-care, even if you're not working through something really hard. I often tell people, let's say, I always tell people, don't wait for a crisis. No, just like you know who your doctor is, typically, you know, you don't wait for a crisis. Same with a therapist, kind of know who that person's going to be, get to know them a little bit. Maybe you don't see them, but twice a year or once a year for a check-in. But just as we do that with our physical bodies, I think it's really wise to do that with a therapist. Find someone you trust. I think it's just good mental health practice. So yeah, if you're dealing with something that is disturbing, any like work, sleep, home, you know, relational things, that's where you want to get in with a weekly therapist or at least bi-weekly. But for the rest, for anybody else, I would just say, just know who that person is, get to know them so they're there. Because even if you're doing okay, people around you are going to, it's just life. Life challenges are going to come and it's really helpful to have someone to walk you through it.
I love that. Allison, thank you so much for coming on the show. I loved this. You are amazing. And we're going to link to your podcast and your new book in the show notes. You guys go pick up her new book. I'm so grateful to have gotten to talk to you today.
Oh, thanks for having me, Stephanie. I really appreciate you. And it was a great conversation. Thank you.
Friend, thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Before you go, I have some really exciting news to share with you. My new book, Create a Life You Love, is officially out in the world. I cannot wait to share this with you. This book is a guided journey of self-discovery, helping you take the pressure off what you think your life is supposed to look like by now, and intentionally, confidently, and authentically build the life you actually want to live. A life that looks and feels like you. To learn more about the book and pick up a copy for yourself, just head to stephaniemaywilson.com/create
Or you can search for Create a Life You Love wherever books are sold. Friend, thank you so much for listening to today's episode and for being in my corner. It just means the world to me. I love our Girls Night community. I will see you next week.